I did mean to mention earlier, in case it's not mentioned later, that all of those who have been sitting in this section over here get to go first at lunch today. Just mention that. Working on the series that we've been doing has forced me to try to think about why I became a Christian in the first place and why I have remained one despite the ups and downs of life. And some of the scenes, I have to say, that have run through my mind and explained it to myself have been unexpected to me. They haven't been the things that I might have thought. One example is when those of us who were in our late teens at the time, who were a part of a little congregation in the country at that time, where I'm from, went to visit one evening one of our older ladies whose name was Maud Lewis. Maud lived in the last house on the way to the lake. She had family in the community, but not very many of them were present with us when the church met. Maud was at that point in her life a smaller lady. She had the signs of Parkinson's already. I'm not sure I thought about it at the time, but she was also my grandfather's younger sister. Maud lived in a big old house where they'd raised a family. I don't remember whose idea it was for us to go do that. I don't remember who all was even there at the time, but I remember being there. And I remember two things about it. Maud made us lemonade. She had it arranged ahead of time and cookies. And she seemed so glad to have a group of teenagers sitting there in her house with her telling us stories and paying attention and taking joy in serving us. I didn't realize it then, but I was experiencing a great spiritual principle of life. And it's been playing out in my life ever since. I remember it even though it's been about 50 years ago. Peter identified the principle when he wrote that it's in intending to bless that we obtain a blessing. 1 Peter 3 and verse 9. And he was only applying what Jesus said, whoever loses his life will find it. Matthew 16, verse 25. And what I want to say to us this morning is that life works that way for younger people too, just like it does for those of us who are on the flip side of life, as we thought about last week. In fact, notice that I don't have the courage or the blindness here to include myself in the editorial we here. Those who are in the springtime of life may have more of a capacity to bless and to be blessed than they've ever thought about or than we know. I want to ask you to think about it with me for a few minutes and think about it in the light of Paul's last letters. 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, and Titus. Think about how the younger ones how they bless the lives of those around them. And I haven't attached a specific age. I'm talking about younger ones, whether they're 5 or 15 or 25. There is an ability, a meaning that you have in the lives of those of us who are now farther along in our journey that needs to be re-emphasized. And I start this way. Younger ones blessed by being a presence that reinforces in the lives of older Christians our conviction that the Lord is able to keep what was entrusted to us. One of the natural parts of life as our lives goes along is wondering what will happen. What will happen when we are not able to go on as we have been? What will happen to the things that have mattered to us and so forth? In 1 and 2 Timothy, you see the progression that Paul sees that can take place. 1 Timothy 1:11, the gospel of the glory of God with which I have been entrusted, Paul says. And then 1 Timothy 1 verse 18, continuing the thought, this charge I entrust to you, Timothy, my child, that you may wage the good warfare. Now watch, what was entrusted to Paul, he's entrusting to Timothy, and the outcome is in 2 Timothy chapter 1 at verse 12. And I'm going to read the English Standard Translation of this verse in this case. I am not ashamed, and Paul says, even though he's suffering, for I know whom I have believed, and I am convinced that he is able to guard until that day what was or what has been entrusted to me. Now, what makes Paul so convinced of that? Well, one is faith in God, but two, the presence of someone like Timothy. He sees in Timothy that God is able to do things that are continue doing things that are not in Paul's hands, or to keep things that are not going to be in Paul's hands any longer. And it's touching in that passage in 2 Timothy 1 at verse 8. Paul had said to Timothy, "Do not be ashamed of the testimony about our Lord, nor of me." So you younger ones, remember that your presence, I suppose I could say, or your absence, has a huge impact on the morale of your older brothers and sisters. You may not realize it, and they may not tell you, but our confidence that the Lord is able is partly because of you. Second, younger ones bless the rest of us by having the practical knowledge and ability and energy to do things that we would not get done otherwise. One of my favorite little stories, partly because I see myself in it, is a mother of a six-year-old who wrote that her kindergartner had an assignment that day at school to draw a picture of a challenge that she thought she could overcome. So she drew a picture of herself teaching her mother how to use the TV remote. The technology and the use of it is an easy example, but what I mean runs much deeper than that. What I'm getting at has to do with the circumstances and situations in our lives. The fact is, we get to the place where we walk slower, we don't react with our thoughts quite as quickly. What we know how to do is what we learned how to do when we were your age in some cases. And as Paul writes these last letters, he's in circumstances and situations like this. There's a gap between what he can do and what he knows needs to be done. He's limited by circumstances outside himself in that he's a prisoner, and by realities within himself in that his time is running down and he can't get to everything that he knows he needs to get to. But Titus and Timothy are younger. They can go places, they can do things, they can bear responsibilities, they can meet challenges, they can attend to needs. Younger people, younger Christians, the benefits of your strengths and of your abilities are essential to the rest of us. We need you in that way. Third, younger ones blessed by causing the preoccupations of our lives, our older lives, to revolve around what really matters. You're crucial to our maintaining a healthy faith in our lives, one that's not merely about us and about our interests and our issues and our problems and our preferences. By your trying to live for the Lord and face the world as it is in front of you, you are the refocus of our outlook on life. It's through your eyes that we see aspirations and challenges and needs that are present in your walk, and pressures and fears every bit as the powerful looking and daunting things that we face in our lives. It's interesting how many times in these last three letters Paul finds it necessary to say something like he does in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 23. It must be at least a half dozen times in these letters. But here's what he says to Timothy. Have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. You know that they breed quarrels. What he's doing is, in his older years, he's saying to Timothy, make sure that you focus on what really matters. And Paul is having to do that himself. Why? Well, because the end of the charge is love that issues from a pure heart and a good conscience and sincere faith. 1 Timothy 1 and 5. And because what really matters is that godliness develop in our lives, and that we take hold of that which is really life, and that we be brought safely into His heavenly kingdom. That's what really matters, that we get to heaven. And it's our young people being among us and with us while we're making the journey through that causes us to keep our faith focused in that direction and not to be preoccupied with what's happening to the world or with our aches and pains or with what's comfortable for us. What really matters? Then fourth, younger ones blessed by being the living proof to us that the service and sacrifice of our lives, what we believe in and what we've lived for, has meaning. I'm sorry if this one sounds self-serving. I don't mean for it to be at all. You may not be far enough along in your journey yet to realize that our understanding of this is not a given. Somewhere in the middle of our lives, we meet the crisis which is voiced twice in the last verse of our daily Bible reading for this day, Psalm 90. Establish the work of our hands. Yes, establish the work of our hands, or that type statement. Through Paul's last letters, there are glimpses of this need in his own life, especially in view of the fact that having served, he's now experiencing hardship. He mentions his past failings, people who've made shipwreck of the faith, persons who've turned away from him, some who did him great harm. And you, if you're in that situation, you can read it and you can hear him almost saying, has it all meant anything? Have I done any good? Is there any lasting meaning in this? But you younger ones, and what you're doing for the Lord is evidence to us that our work in preschool Bible classes, or our presence in meetings of the church, or the efforts that we've tried to make in living for the Lord in the community has meant something and does to you now. And then next, the younger ones bless by bringing the personal recognition and caring and respect and affection that every human being has to have to nourish the sense, his sense of well-being. There are junctures in the lives of people sitting around you today when these things are in short supply. There's a move to a new place. The empty nest experience. Retirement, or the prospect of it. Being left alone after years of marriage. And then what goes along with older age. These are seasons that involve feelings that are very similar to what you find in the first and last chapters of 2 Timothy. There are people who turned away from me, who refreshed me and were not ashamed of my chains, Paul said. Then there's being poured out, deserted, alone, having been harmed, no one to stand by me, and come to me soon in the last chapter. I want to remind you of a story that almost everybody here will remember, and then I want to change something about it. Remember that Jackie Robinson was the first black man to play Major League Baseball. And maybe you've heard the story that in his first season with the Brooklyn Dodgers, Robinson faced, of course, all kinds of venom nearly everywhere he traveled. Pitchers threw fastballs at his head and runners spiked him on the bases. Brutal messages were written to him on cards and spoken from opposing dugouts. And even some of the crowds in Brooklyn, his home park, saw him as an object of reproach. There's the famous occasion one time in Boston when the taunts and the racial slurs seemed to reach their loudest crescendo. And to make matters worse, Robinson committed an error and stood at second base humiliated while the fans hurled insults at him. At that moment, another Dodger, a southern white young man by the name of Pee Wee Reese, called time out, walked from his position at shortstop over to Robinson at second base, and with the crowds looking on, he put his arm around Robinson's shoulder. The park grew quiet. And Robinson later said that that arm around his shoulder saved his career. Now imagine that instead of a black man and a white man, we have an old man and a young man. The loneliness and isolation can be just as strongly felt. And in a world where it so often seems that experience is thrown out with yesterday's news, and only youth is admired, it can mean so much if a younger Christian man or woman, boy or girl, pays that kind of attention to an older one. You are understanding, you younger ones are understanding and compassion and belonging to the rest of us. Now, it's in intending to bless that you're blessed. So, in this process, younger ones are blessed. That's how the Lord works things. When we try to bless, we end up being recipients of blessing. I want to mention quickly three ways in which younger ones are blessed, and I won't have time to dwell on this, as you know. But younger ones, when you give yourself to this kind of action on purpose, you'll be blessed with connection to a faith family that can sustain your faith past graduation from the youth group. In Sticky Faith, Powell and Clark in their research say that when we develop a 5-to-1 adult-to-kid ratio, where there are 5 adult Christians who show interest in each student or child, the young person tends to stay with it. 5-to-1. Now, older people have an obligation in this that we talked about last week. Younger ones have to ask, am I willing for that connection to be formed? Or do I only value people who are my age? Second, younger ones who bless will be blessed with assumptions and conduct patterns for good living. Now maybe you'll gain these unconsciously and all of that, but you'll gain them effectively. You'll find yourself years down the road doing what you saw over here in some older Christian man or woman's life. Some of you sat where you did this morning and sang the parts that you sang partly because of who you sat with at church when you were a kid. Carrie led some songs this morning, some of them because they were meaningful to him from then. James K.A. Smith, in his wonderful book, You Are What You Love, calls this process being habituated. What he means by that is we are what we love, and what we love is determined by our habits, and our habits are informed gradually by what we see as normal and desirable, which we choose by the company we keep and the rituals in our lives. Third, a younger one who tries to bless in this way will be blessed with a sense of your own value as a person and of the possibilities for your life. I brought with me a picture. I don't know why I didn't think to see if Scott could put this up for us, but a picture painted by John Everett Millais in 1870. It's famous. It's a picture of that's called the Boyhood of Raleigh. Raleigh being Sir Walter Raleigh, who, as you recall, was Queen Elizabeth I's intrepid explorer. He's a fellow who established some of the first British colonies in North Carolina. He also famously set sail twice in search of the elusive El Dorado. In this painting of Raleigh as a boy, Millais imagines what would it have been that would have created such an adventurer and an explorer. And this painting is his answer to that. Here is the background of a sea and a small seawall. And here are two boys sitting, it's Raleigh and his brother, sitting there with eyes bugged out and mouths open, paying rapt attention to this old, wizened sailor who is pointing to an immense sea, obviously talking to them, and they're taking in what he says. And Millais's point is that what gave birth to Raleigh's longing and his use of his life and his interest in exploring were the stories told by some older sailor when he was a boy. Suppose that sea is a Christian life and not an unknown world. How will our young people learn to sail on that sea? One way to gain a chart for the course, his association with those older. Friends, in the springtime of life, decisions can be made that will impact the whole life, and not just the life of that younger person. And one of the chief among those decisions is the decision to bless, because at the moment it's made, it's also a decision to be blessed in some crucially important ways. I want to encourage every boy or girl, every young woman or young man, every younger parent, to think of yourself in this picture and to understand that you have the capacity in your hands with the Lord's help to make a great difference for good in the lives of people that are deserving of your respect and of your attention. It's holy work, and I encourage you at it. Maybe you're here this morning wanting to be a part of the Lord's family and hearing the gospel call, which makes the invitation open to anybody for that to happen. If you're here wanting to be a Christian and ready to make the good confession and to be baptized into Christ, it'd be a privilege to help you do so. And if you're here needing the prayers of brothers and sisters in Christ, that's one reason for our gathering, and we offer the opportunity for anyone to let that kind of desire be known right now while we stand and sing this song together.